You know, Jeff Merrick, the coach of your team can sometimes be the face of your team. You know, he's the person you take cues from. You take on the personality of your coach.
Oh, really, kind of like Fred Shiro of the Flyers, in a lot of ways.
Yep.
Scotty Bowman of the 70s with the Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Al Arbor to a large extent with that
talent like
when, to reap. Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Right. When the Devils hired Jacques Lemaire to get that Montreal Canadiens, je ne sais quoi.
Then how come then when once upon a time, Glenn Sather, when he was the head coach at the Edmonton Oilers, when he confronted Kevin McClellan about smoking too much and said, oh, look, your fingers are orange. You got to stop smoking so much. McClellan spun around and said, no. I just eat a lot of cheesies, coach. Was he channeling the spirit of Slats or was he just trying to make a joke?
I think he was probably channeling the spirit of Slats, but you know, knowing that locker room, who knows what that substance actually was. I say this, Merrick, obviously, because when the United States steps onto the hallowed ice of the Air Canada Center next September, representing the red, white, and blue, old glory, democracy, all of it, in the World Cup of Hockey tournament, they will be personified by a squinty-eyed Italian with impulse control problems who lasted one season in his last coaching stint.
What I most look forward to is the I've changed and I'm a different coach stories that are going to start coming out over the next 12 months. You know, I've learned. I've taken some time to pause and listen. I mean, Mark Crawford was the last one we saw this from before he took the Dallas job. No, I'm a different coach now. No, I'm a different guy. No, this is all different. I have a different style of coaching. When, you know, when push comes to shove, a lot of these guys just sort of rely on, you know, what they've been all along. So that's the one that I'm most looking forward to when it comes to John Tortorella's time coaching Team USA, the how I'm different this time around story.
No, for sure. And I think that's already started. I mean, listening to Dean Lombardi's press conference with Tortorella, a press conference that will forever live in infamy for having four consecutive prank callers off the top. Holy
shit. Yeah, you got to watch that.
Oh my God, it was so embarrassing. But listening to Lombardi talk about it, it sounds like the contrite, Tortorella, I've learned from my mistakes.
But
thing
he did it last time.
What sold them.
But when,
that's what sold them on them.
But he did it last time when he was doing TV for TSN, right? This is, I've changed, I'm different. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Vancouver happened. And he's chasing Bob Hartley down the hallway.
But now
he's by the way, if anyone at Hockey Canada is listening right now, please, Bob Hartley, head coach of Team Canada, please.
No,
please,
I'll go back to what I said.
Or just
when
put Hartley on
I'll
the bench doing anything.
Well, that would be fine. But as I said when Tortorella was announced, Canada has to hire Dale Hunter now. In every the game, the USA Canada game will have no shots on goal. Everything will be blocked. It's got to happen. He's using the Vancouver thing as yet another example of his, you know, learning how to be a better coach, learning how to be a better person. You know, it's just, like you said, it's on and on with this. But they bought it. And, you know, it shocked me because I really thought that this was going to be a tournament in which we were going to have all NHL all the time. You know, NHL coaches, that are in the league currently with teams and NHL players, the whole thing. I really didn't think they were going to hire a guy outside the box, but I mean, it does make sense in the sense that September is a really shitty time to put anything else on the plate of a National Hockey League coach that's currently employed.
Let me ask you one question. In a tournament like this, and I said the same thing about the Olympics as well, and with all due respect to gold medal winning coach Mike Babcock, how much coaching do you do? In a tournament like this, on a scale of 0 to 0, how much coaching really goes on? As opposed to which team has the most amount of guys who are going to step up and say, we're not going to lose this effing thing.
Well, in the Olympics, I think a lot of coaching went on, don't you?
No.
You don't think so?
You don't think
Mike Babcock keeping his hand on the leash with that Canadian team and the defense they played was by design?
Did it look like Drew Doughty was being coached at all? Like, honestly.
But look how they won those games.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a style established by the coaching staff at the very least. I'm not saying
all these guys already know how to play. Guys are playing this way. No one's teaching anything.
But at the very least, the coach, you're taking that signal from the coach, though.
Who had ice time taken away from them?
PK.
That was more a GM's thing, I think, than a coach thing. Okay, put him in the game against Germany and get everyone happy, and then we'll just go on and try to win the gold medal.
But look, I mean, like, you know, in the, listen, Canada might not be the best example because, like you said, I mean, roll the puck out there and watch him go,
no,
right?
I know. For what Teddy Nolan did for Latvia, I'll concede that. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
But also for the U.S.
An elite talent like the United States or Sweden or Canada or Russia, how much real, like, honestly, it's such a short tournament. Like, you have such a short amount of time with these guys. How much actual coaching are you going to do?
Well, evidently there was some coaching.
But I would
argue there was coaching in the U.S.'s case in Sochi because they played a up-tempo offensive style for most of the tournament, and then they saw that friggin' maple leaf, and all of a sudden they didn't rush the puck. So yeah, there was some coaching going on. It was terrible coaching, but coaching nonetheless.
We all remember your Dan Bylsma blog at the end of all of it, Greg. Don't worry.
I know. I still feel bad about it too, because like I like Bylsma a lot as a coach and as a person, and he's never said boo to me about it. But like, goddamn, that was frustrated the hell out of me to see that the way they went out next tournament.
But good for him, because you know, in a lot of ways, and I've said this about hockey players as well. Like, by the time you get to the NHL, whether you're a player, whether you're a head coach, you've heard everything about what you do from a number of different corners. And the one thing you have to develop is a thick skin. You do you can say whatever you want about like the softest players in the history of the game, and there have been plenty of them. But to get to the NHL, you've had to mute out so much about what people think about you just to get there, right? I was talking to someone the other day, an assistant coach in the NHL, because we're talking about, and I hope we get a chance to talk about this today, we're talking about Todd Ewan's death, and we started talking about that former, because the role is evolving out of the NHL, we're talking about that role of player and what happens when you bag skate those players. In a lot of ways, those are the guys that just go through the motions, because in many ways, they're embarrassed about their game and they want to pretend that they're above it. They want to pretend that they're not about that at all.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So there's that fear in a lot of ways that they don't want their talents, you know, exposed that way in something as simple as a bag skate. We look at some of the pretty much all the skill guys. Like, laugh whatever you want about, you know, Pierre Turgeon heard it in 87 about sitting on the bench during the punch-up in Pietrangelo. But just to get to the NHL, man, you've heard everything about who you are as a hockey player. And to not allow that to bleed into yourself, this idea of, okay, people are criticizing my game, and understand that there's my game and then there's myself, my human being, my person. A lot of guys can sort of blur that. But I think the pros sort of separate that and say, okay, that's a criticism not of me, but of my job and what I am doing. I think you get in trouble when you say you're criticizing what I've done, therefore you're criticizing me as a person.
And you're bringing up a subtle nuance in the way that hockey teams are put together that people sometimes forget. Why do we always see the third line being the line that hustles the most? Because they're in the most precarious position of anybody in pro sports other than a place kicker. You are either going to be demoted to the fourth line or hit the bench, or if you play well, you might be able to play into the top six. It's an amazing motivation to have stakes. And a guy on a 7-year deal worth six per doesn't have stakes. He's there. He has a no move clause. He can basically put roots down. The guy on the third line on the 1 or 2 year deal, not making but $2 million or $3 million, he's got stakes. Because his ass could be back in the AHL if needs be, or scratched, or skating with aforementioned fourth line.
Part of that too, though, for a lot of those players, I know a lot of my more like, oh, you don't give these guys long-term deals because they just start licking the envelope and mailing it in. But a lot of these guys, by the time you get to the NHL, have such a pride of ownership over what they do, they don't. As a generalization, like, it's more the exception, you know, the guys that sign the big ticket deals and then go south. They do have that pride. I will say that for these.
But they don't have that fear.
No, they don't live with that fear, but they live with the fear of embarrassment, and that's a legitimate one. They live with the fear of you can't hang here anymore. Oh, I'm not on the All-Star team. Oh, I'm not getting something as small as getting power play time, first shift power play time. There's still that totem pole of where you are on the team based on your ice time and how much power play time you're getting, and, you know, is coach giving me my cookies? There's still a lot there.
Because they're all numbers obsessed, even though they don't talk about it.
100%. Well, are you familiar with how arbitration works?
Right, exactly. I mean, I thought about that reading all the Thomas Vanek stuff this week from Mike Russo about how, you know, how his season went beyond the injuries and beyond the off-ice stuff with the gambling, the whole thing. It was the idea that the team wasn't getting him the puck where it needed to get it, to get him the puck, and he put it too much upon himself to be a playmaker versus being a sniper. And the first thing I thought is, well, that's why we all said Minnesota shouldn't sign this guy, because they didn't need him. And then the second thing I thought was, you know, it's amazing to think about, you know, a guy who has definitely made his way in this league and definitely has established himself in this league, basically kind of saying, this team doesn't cater to my needs, you know? But when you have the accomplishments that Vanek has, when you're on a 3-year deal with the money that they've paid you, I think there's a sense of, and also because you chose Minnesota, even though we all knew it was sort of, you know, destiny that he was going to go there. He chose Minnesota over other places. I think the sense is you need to give me the things that I need to succeed. And when you don't, well, then things aren't going to go as well as you planned them.
Hey, listen, a lot of those things are promised when you're negotiating, when you're a free agent, right? Like, part of the pitch is not just, here's the money, come play for our team. Part of it is, okay, well, what position is he going to be put in? Which players are going to be surrounded by? How is the coach going to treat him? Like, all that stuff goes into a pitch.
Yeah, you remember the whole thing with Peter Sikora in Minnesota a few years ago with when Walsh went popped off on Twitter about it. You know, when we signed here, we were promised X number of minutes ice time per game, and now he's playing this different role, and we're not cool with it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it definitely happens like that. Back to Tortorella.
Okay.
Do you like, I mean, listen, I understand what
hockey's
you just said
always
about,
better with John Tortorella in it.
Yeah,
buddy.
But
I know what you mean, but it's always better with Torts in it.
It's such a weird pick, though, isn't it?
It is. And listen, everyone's like, well, you know, they wanted someone who's unencumbered by having an NHL job. How do you know Tortorella's not going to have an NHL job by next summer?
Apparently he's not.
Really?
Well, I mean, you know, it seems that way. I mean, if you get this USA gig, it sounds like they expect him to just be able to focus on that.
Yeah, okay. Let's say, well, let's take the Minnesota Wild example. They go 2-12 to kick off the season. And all of a sudden, Chuck's calling John Tortorella.
Hmm. Let's see, what other ex-Penguin could they hire? I'm at a loss. No, it's a good point, but I think the expectation is that he won't get a job in the next round of firings.
He's still counting his Vancouver money.
Of course
he's
he
okay.
Is.
He's okay.
Right, exactly.
Don't worry.
I've heard two differing opinions about him. I've heard that he's not a tactician, and I've heard that he is someone who coaches to the strengths of his roster, or in some cases, the limitations of his roster. And that's why we saw him coach up tempo in Tampa Bay when they won the cup.
Yeah.
And that's why we saw him go into the shelliest defensive shell that ever shelled in front of Henrik Lundqvist in New York.
But didn't have the right personnel to do that, though.
Yeah, which is the problem. Outside of Dan Girardi dropping and then Ryan Callahan dropping out of block every shot.
Yeah, like that's cool. You can do that with those guys because that's who they are as hockey players. Hey, Henrik. Hey, Daniel. You might want to get some new shin pads. Here's why.
But every time Henrik goes down and gets hit with a shot, I feel the pain.
It's Korsakin brothers.
I know, the Korsakin brothers. Also, that was also Bobby Holik and Jarmo Kekalainen impression. I only do 9. You guys know that.
Got more, but they kind of bleed into each other.
Yeah, they really do.
You're going to be like old and senile one day, and every impression is going to exactly sound the same. Hey, Greg, do your man on my own. No, that's for Esposito, Greg. No, Greg.
Well, the Tampa Bay Lightning called me up and said, hey, Toots, we need a goaltender.
Well, actually,
I said, okay, I'll become your goaltender.
Bill was the GM when he brought in Manon at that point in Tampa Bay, Greg, but doesn't mean you need to confuse the impression.
I called her up and said, hey, Tuts, me and the goalie. And she said, oh, okay, I'll come and be your goalie and make history.
Be Greg in a wheelchair in the seniors' home one day getting pushed around.
It's brilliant. It's like you were actually in the room during the negotiation. So as an American, John Tortorella is my coach is kind of a weird thing. But I ultimately think, as you said, in a short tournament, it matters less.
It does.
And maybe in the second period of that Canada game, when our boys are down 1-0 and they need someone to light a fire on their keisters, John will go the full torts and then we'll rally to win the game. Wouldn't that be exciting?
Yeah, he'll just turn to Jack Eichel and say, Jack, we need a goal. Oh, hang on a second. No, he's playing with that other team.
Yeah, we are, of course, a victim of our own success when it comes to getting kids to play hockey. They're all super young. Brandon Saad, Jack Eichel, you know, but whatever. It's going to be fun. But what do you think this
Hang on, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Is Austin Matthews going to be on that U23 team?
See, that's an interesting question for, on a number of fronts.
Because he wouldn't have played an NHL game.
He wouldn't have played an NHL game, and I think I saw a projection maybe from ESPN about what Team Russia might look like, and Radulov was on the list. And I'm like, but they're not going to allow anybody from another league to play on these teams unless he's back in the NHL in 2016, are they?
Why not?
Because it's an NHL tournament.
It's a good point. Here's a question. Can Russia ice a full competitive team? And I think specifically on the blue line. Like, that's the one area where once upon a time, like, you look in the 70s, as much as you make a lot about, you know, the Harlamovs of the world, the Russian defense was spectacular and was spectacular for decades. The one place where Russia has lagged woefully behind the rest of the world is making blue liners. Right. Everybody wants to skate and score. Everybody wants to do that. No one's playing in the back end.
Yeah.
They have enough blue liners on Russia to ice a team?
That's a legit concern. And are the blue liners in the KHL any better than the 22-year-olds that you'd have over here filling out the top six? No, I think that's a concern, just like I think goaltender for the Young Guns team is a concern. But the whole point of not doing the Slovakia team and the Swiss team is because they didn't want an F-load of guys from overseas playing.
All right, hot take time for the Young Kids game, Young Kids team. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Subban, starting goaltender, that begins his ascent to dominate the NHL. That's going
to
be his coming out party.
Listen to that.
I'm just saying.
No less an authority than Jeff Merrick.
Next, I'm going
to joining us now on the line is a man who we tried to talk to last week. He came on board during a intense debate about Patrick Kane.
Then bailed.
And then his BJ. He claimed his phone didn't work. Chris Johnston of Sportsnet joins us here on the Merrick Rosdrinsky podcast. Hello, Chris. How are you?
CJ, which airport are you in now?
I'm sitting in my living room. Everything's good.
All right. We have a secure line. There's no one else on this line other than the three of us.
We do. I got to say, though, Jeff, I think Connor Hellebuyck is the guy for the Young Guns team there.
Yeah, you know what? A lot of it's based on – I had a really long conversation with someone from Providence who played in Providence the other day about Malcolm Subban, and I got sold in hard on how good this – I mean, I saw him tons in junior. We all saw him at the WJC, but sold in hard about how good a pro he's going to be. But he's probably not going to get a shot because of the Finnish guy in front of him.
Right.
Will Jack Campbell be in his seventh or eighth year playing in the AHL by the time this tournament comes
around? Still considered top prospect.
That's right. hey, CJ, do you have any inkling on who might coach the Young Guns, by the way? I'm really intrigued by that.
I don't really. I mean, I'm on board with liking the idea of John Cooper coaching it, but
that's what I heard.
I don't have any information that that's going to happen. I mean, the reason someone like him to me makes sense is that he's worked for USA Hockey in the past. He's a Canadian citizen by birth, and you know, I think he's kind of the right sort of age group, and the way he communicates with players, I just think it's a good fit, but I don't know where they're going to go with that.
So American by trade, but he speaks Canadian, so that's obviously a real asset.
How does he, with a North American team. First question, how do you spell color?
O-U-R.
There you go, you're in.
And
no,
Chris,
I mean, it doesn't really. I don't think that the nationality stuff maybe matters so much, but I just know he's done some work with Hockey Canada and both USA Hockey earlier in his career when he was in the AHL, and I just think that you know there might be some benefit to knowing both those organizations a little bit.
And Chris, were you surprised by Tortorella that they went with somebody who isn't currently a National Hockey League coach, or do you think we're going to see that around the tournament, guys that don't have current NHL gigs maybe taking this gig and being able to go a little bit long term with the planning and the roster building of this thing?
Well, that's probably the end of it. I mean, obviously Ralph Kruger is the same, for the pan-European team. And, you know, I spoke with some of their management when they were here in Toronto a week or two ago. And, you know, that was his main thing. They liked his background, but also that he can maybe devote more time to it. And he won't have commitments, you know, in Europe, for example, if they had hired, say, a Finnish league coach. That guy, or I guess wouldn't be a Finn, but an Austrian league coach, you know, that season would be going on over there. But, you know, certainly for the big teams here, I think we'll see some notable names. And, you know, as I mentioned, I'd be very surprised whether it's not John Cooper if the North American team didn't have an NHL coach as the head coach.
We were talking before you got on the program here, CJ, about positionally, where have all the great Russian defensemen gone? And we saw that at the Olympics in Sochi, and we'll probably see it this time around. If you're handicapping this tournament, as much as you may want to, you know, have a good, strong look at what's up front for Team Russia, man, there is nothing on the back end, CJ. There's nothing.
Not, not what you would want for a team that's going to be picked by some to win it, or certainly be in the mix to have a chance to win it. And, you know, I think that that's really hurt their chances at the last number of Olympics as well. And, you know, I think back to that 2010 game against Vancouver, or against Canada in Vancouver, and they lost 7-3, and the Canadians just had a forecheck on them. They didn't have defensemen that could move the puck and get it out of their zone, and you know, that was their undoing. So, you know, for all the glamour talent they have, and even, you know, a couple goaltenders, I think that can keep them at the elite level internationally, the D is an issue. And, you know, I agree with you. I think we're going to see some KHL defensemen there. Yep. I would be surprised, as we sit here now, if Slava Blinov is one of them, just because of the way everything's unfolded, obviously, for the last year. But I don't see any way around them not, you know, having at least a couple guys from the domestic league, because they're going to try to win it, right? I mean, they want, they're obviously a top-notch hockey country, and they do want to win it, and they're going to try to bring their best team.
So in summary, CJ, it's because Ovechkin is a bad leader.
No. And neither Pavel Datsyuk's not a bad leader either. And he was, you know, he was leading the way for them in Sochi, and they fell short. But no hot takes for like that for me.
Oh, fair enough. What's your hot? What? Oh, go ahead, sir.
No, go ahead. I was going to take it to a somber note, but you keep it going.
No, I'm gonna keep it not somber for a second. But
right,
I know where you're going.
I'll drag it down in a second. It's not where you think I'm going to go either. Which is actually
Chris. Your cousin Eric signed a pretty big contract with the Colorado Avalanche this week. What did you think of the Eric Johnson deal?
Well, great for him, obviously. You know, and it's sort of one of those ones that's a little different. I mean, I think we can't ever remove ourselves from the situation, you know, that the team's been dealing with. And, you know, having had to trade away O'Reilly, having lost Paul Stastny, you know, I think part of what's happening there is they want to hold on to some of their top assets. And, you know, he obviously had a great season prior to getting the knee injury there in January. So I think that all makes sense. The one thing I will say about it, it's long-term, but I think he's still young enough, and we've seen defensemen perform quite routinely, you know, well into their 30s, a little bit more than forwards as elite players. And you know, I don't think it's that. I don't have much problem with it. I kind of understand it. And I think, you know, had he taken it out and had a year like he had last year and gone to free agency, he probably could have done better. So it was one of those ones that I view, honestly, as reasonable from both sides. And I guess we'll go from there and you know, see how he rebounds from that injury.
He's only getting like $250,000 more than Niskanen got per year on the open market, so that's a pretty good number for them. But on top of that, like, I love a guy who gets challenged to be better and then gets better and also gets himself in better shape and gets smarter with the puck and doesn't take as many dumb chances as he used to. And I think that having Beauchemin there potentially as his partner this year is going to portend even greater things for this kid, because now he's got a rock back there that he can depend on and he can freelance a little bit more.
Exactly. And, you know, it takes, you know, we've always hear this, especially around training camp time, when you're debating certain prospects in certain cities about whether they'll stick with the big club. But, you know, I really think there is something to it, taking defensemen longer to find their legs in this league and, you know, really learn how to become impact players and handle the position. And, you know, Eric would seem to be, you know, someone who falls into that category. And, you know, everyone was raving about him last year. I mean, I think that he really opened some eyes and, you know, obviously that's what, you know, I think a lot of this contract is based on, is that they saw sort of the potential that had been there was realized. And you know, that was something that the Avs felt like they couldn't go into the season and, you know, have it hanging over their head. I don't believe Eric wanted to discuss the contract during the year, which, so there was sort of that kind of deadline hanging over it. And, you know, he's found a way to make an impact. And it's sort of a weird team there in Colorado. So many enticing, the players, so many great talents, but I'm not sure how it's all going to come together and you know, what they're going to come up with.
All right, Colorado hot take time then. Mikko Rantanen, this year's David Pastrnak, true or false?
False. Did you want me to say true?
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, of all the, it's always interesting to see, you know, which players in the first round stick with their NHL squads. And I think a lot of us were shocked to see Rantanen fall as far as Colorado. And when you look at needs and when you look at how strong the kid is already physically and the high level that he already plays at, wouldn't shock me if he's on this team.
No, I guess I thought you meant, was he going to make as big of an impact maybe as Pastrnak did? But, you know, you're right. I that wouldn't be a surprise. I mean, I should ask you, Jeff, are you surprised that Provorov was sent back by the Flyers yesterday?
No, because Ron Hextall played for the Brandon Wheat Kings as well when he was in junior. he's helping his old squad. It is interesting because when you look at that sort of list of Travis Sanheim and Samuel Morin and Shane Gostisbehere, like, you can make the argument that Ivan Provorov's at the front of that list.
Right, but I mean, probably won't do bad by any stretch to go back and play another year in that league. But
go dominate. That's a top team in the CHL. It's a top team in the CHL, CJ. Like, they're right now, I know that, you know, Red Deer is like loading up and trying to get the Brusque out of Swift Current and stuff. But right now, the class of the entire CHL is Brandon, and it just got better.
And, you know, I think the Flyers actually have a nice group of prospects come along now.
100%. Yep.
Yeah, on the blue line especially.
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, no sense rushing that into action.
Yeah, and a coach that was hired because his name sounds like the GM. So we all know this. It's the truth.
Hextall and Hextall?
All right.
It's an embarrassing thing to admit, but I still remember I was walking down the street. It was during the playoffs. I think I was in New York when that press release came in, and I was like, who? And that's a real I should know. I should have been aware of him, obviously.
Nate Ewell, cover your ears. Nate Ewell, cover your ears right now. He doesn't mean that.
I know. Well,
it is completely fine.
I'm admitting it's my own failing, but I thought it was almost a joke. You know, it's one of those ones, sort of like when I got the David Clarkson traded to Columbus. You know, I had to really make sure that was a true thing, that wasn't a joke someone was playing on me or something.
Chris, there's about, I would say, roughly four players on the Flyers roster who didn't say who when he was hired. I mean, come on.
Right.
Let's be honest.
But it's my job. Yeah, what's going on around hockey wider than the NHL, more than theirs, probably.
Probably. Yeah, that's true. They probably don't even know what teams are in their division. Chris, we spin the wheel of shitty stories now. Would you want to talk about Todd Ewan or Patrick Kane first?
If I can jump in, I wouldn't mind mentioning Ewan, because I wanted to get Ewan on the podcast as quick as we can. I'm curious to get your take on this one, CJ, as quickly as possible. I'm surprised that this... And maybe it's just sort of a commentary on how, you know, we're getting to, like, football or pro wrestling about this now. But you know, Todd Ewan takes his own life, and this wasn't anywhere close to as big a thing as Bugard or Bielak or Rippon. And I know that all those things sort of happened in concert at the same at similar times in that one, you know, summer of horror. But it seemed almost as if the NHL said, wow, that's a drag, and then we all just kind of moved on.
Yeah, I mean, I would think another aspect in that is that those players were either still active players or, you know, not as far out of the league, so maybe a bit more in the public consciousness. And as you mentioned, even, you know, the fact that they have only, you know, a month of each other during that same summer. But you're right, it's a very sad case, and I would think with sort of the larger conversation happening around the concussion lawsuit in this league, and you know, I still think the fighting debate is going to come back up. We haven't, you know, I haven't seen it really had on a meaningful level in a couple of years now, but I do think it's inevitable that that's going to come back up, and you know, all this must be tied to it. But I mean, hockey doesn't exist in a bubble, and we've seen a lot, as you mentioned, with pro wrestling and the NFL, former players, this type of thing happening, and you know, I think the awareness and the reaction should be stronger, because we have to try to find some answers. And I realize that there's probably not an end game here, but I think that the desire to at least, you know, find ways to prevent this from happening and to reach people that have, you know, maybe dealing with some of these symptoms before they, you know, go and commit suicide is important.
In your dealings with the league, like, this concussion lawsuit is a lingering thing. I don't know if you've gotten the same sense I have, but it seems like they're not that worried about it.
Well, it's so complicated. I mean, they're obviously taking it very seriously, and you know, I know a lot of the top executives in the last number of months have had to go and you know, give statements on the record, you know, essentially hours and hours of testimony about what they knew when, and you know, questions about specific cases, and you know, it's I don't think they're necessarily worried about losing it. I think that the feeling I get from the NHL is that they felt that they've done basically everything they could have, that they created a concussion awareness group before that was something that was happening in other sports, that they've been active and open about, you know, trying to address, you know, this issue. And we all accept that in a sport this fast, you know, played with sort of no out of bounds, as Brian Burke says, that there's going to be head injuries. But, you know, the league, I think, feel that they've done everything they can to control it and to assess it. And you know, that's likely why you sense that they're not perhaps as concerned about what's going to come out of this lawsuit as some feel they should be.
You know, I know that you fish where the fish are, but at the same time, is one of the issues here being very selective about who these players are going after? And hear me out on this one. We'll take a player like Gary Lehman, who's part of the lawsuit.
Right.
Will one of the issues be, well, where did these concussions occurred? How many do we know that you had while you're in the NHL versus how many of these started when you played either with the Notre Dame Hounds or with the Regina Pats of the Western Hockey League?
That's an issue, right? And I think part of what the players ultimately have to prove is that the league, you know, basically knew more than they let on about the seriousness of the issue, and that they did things to disguise this, or that the league's teams, that the teams themselves, that they were, you know, putting the players in harm intentionally. And, you know, unless there's a smoking gun set of old emails or whatever it might be, you know, I'm not sure that's an easy thing for them to, you know, to actually prove in court.
No, I don't know. I mean, I saw one of the lawsuits, and legitimately one of the things they claimed was that there was like a 1930s medical journal article about head injuries, you know, probably next to, you know, the advertisements for cocaine and leeches. But, you know, obviously
that came across John Ziegler's desk very often.
The NHL obviously had to know based on that. And then finally, CJ, I mean, we must address the Patrick Kane thing. This is not three lawyers talking. So yesterday's bizarre press conference involving the opened rape kit arriving on the doorstep of the alleged victim's mother's house, notwithstanding, is there a tipping point here? I mean, I got to be honest with you. Like, yesterday was the first time Christine Brennan from USA Today wrote about Kane. It was the first time Bomani Jones from ESPN was talking about Kane. On First Take this morning on ESPN, they're talking about Kane. I feel like now we're starting to crest over the dam into the mainstream U.S. sports media taking notice of this case. And at what point does it become bad business for the NHL to not do anything about him?
Well, the one thing I've sensed all along here is that the NHL seems reasonably certain that Patrick Kane didn't do anything wrong. I mean, obviously, they haven't done their own investigation, at least in-depth investigation, you know, like what the police are doing or have done. But, you know, the Blackhawks and letting him, you know, speak last week and say that, you know, he's going to be exonerated. The one thing all along is it seems to me that they're suggesting, and then by what's going on, that you know, nothing here is worthy of keeping him out. And it could look like bad business, but I think eventually how we're going to judge what was right or wrong here is, in a sense, by what happens in court. And it was bizarre, as you mentioned yesterday, kind of took it to the level of scandal, even from where it was already a very serious case. And you know, kind of, I think, threw a little bit more cloud over what's going on. But if Patrick Kane ends up not being essentially charged with anything and this case goes away, then, you know, the league, I'm sure, won't look, you know, maybe it won't be such bad business, but I think they're going to take a lot more heat. That's pretty clear. There's a lot of parallels, maybe not in outcome, but in the beginning stages of sort of the Ray Rice thing, where a lot of people felt the NFL put its head in the sand, or, you know, ultimately, I guess there's claims that they saw the video and still didn't do enough about it. But, it's just so hard to know when a legal case is ongoing. And, you know, people want the league to make a strong statement on Kane by maybe suspending him with pay. But, you know, I think there's certainly a lot less evidence in their hands that, you know, a crime was committed here than they had, for example, with Slava Voynov, you know, when, you know, he was suspended last October.
Yeah, with Voynov, they had pictures. With Voynov, they had a sense that...
Well, it started at a team party, too.
This is a bad scene, afternoon game and your party...
And you know, his wife went to the hospital and, you know, gave, you know, testimony that was ultimately used against him in court about saying that he'd done it before and detailed everything. I mean, I think the league at that point had no choice but to suspend him indefinitely while the legal case played out. Whereas in this case, it's clear it's not is cut and dried, I think, from a legal standpoint, what's going to happen.
It was that, you know, the afternoon of torches at the castle gate, and then from there, when the other shoe dropped with, oh, no, we have all the evidence in its original package, it went back to confusion. And that is still, and then people asking me on Twitter yesterday, are you going to, you know, back up any of your statements? Or statements? My statement was, I don't know. And still my statement this week is, I don't know.
Right.
I still don't.
I mean, it's kind of hard to come away from yesterday thinking, oh, I know a lot more than I knew at the beginning of the day, when there are apparently multiple packages, and you have half the world saying it's a hoax, and you have half the world saying it's whistleblowing. Yesterday was circus-like in many ways, and confusing. And I don't know if it did anything to forward the case or anything. I do know that Patrick Kane's lawyer, I learned this yesterday, represented Larry Flint. And really, the one thing that you want to see in a sexual in a sexual assault case press conference is a guy sitting in front of a Hustler magazine 40th anniversary coffee mug on his shelf. I think that really is a nice aesthetic.
Time for full disclosure. I saw that yesterday. I saw you tweeting about it. Full disclosure time. My tattoo artist, Pauline Zahalan at Young Street Tattoos, lover and owner for pretty much my entire adult life, cousin of Larry Flint. So there
is
you go.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, Cousin Larry. We always talk about Cousin Larry when I go get ink.
Cousin Larry?
Yeah.
And this is 3 degrees of Larry Flint here.
I know, it's crazy. Nice. Welcome to the podcast, CJ.
Right. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. Anyways. All right, well, there's that. I mean, you know, I the Kane thing is what it is, and I suppose, you know, until we have a grand jury, some finality from the grand jury, be it one that's called or if they never call it, or if we're just going to keep doing this dance. Now, I thought that – I had to look it up. I thought that maybe that Kane's lawyer was the guy that Ed Norton played in The People versus Larry Flint, but that's not the case. So just to clear that up.
What a bizarre freaking
– I mean, it's an awful case. I mean, one thing that, again, not a strong legal background that I have, but if there's going to be question about whether this evidence – was tampered with or not. I mean, we might not get anything that anyone feels on either side is close to justice, so to speak. I mean, perhaps that will affect the ability to have a proper criminal investigation into what's happened here. But, you know, Patrick Kane maintains he's innocent, and if there's no evidence, maybe I just think there'll always be some doubt here, no matter what the kind of final outcome about what happened. And, you know, that's sort of a shame, I think, that the people that are involved in these type of things deserve to, you know, have the law kind of make a judgment one way or the other.
Oh, I get the sense most people have, regardless of what the outcome is of all this, no one's going to change their mind.
Right.
No, and I mean, we know that for a fact, because you still have people throwing around Drew Doughty's name when talking about rape as if he's a rapist. I mean, and that case is what, a couple of years gone by and there were no charges brought against him. But I mean, yeah, it's going to linger on in perpetuity if that's the way these things are approached, for sure.
Well, and there's a sensitivity, and rightfully so, to rape cases, because, you know, there's a high level of women who are unwilling to come forward, and you know, I think that historically that this has been these have been very difficult cases to prosecute, and I can understand why. It's a very serious allegation, and you know, as the alleged victim's lawyer was saying yesterday that you know, he feels that his client has been, you know, it's a classic case of someone kind of, you know, victim bashing, and, you know, that's something that happens to in sexual assault cases in general, and you know, I am sensitive to that as well.
Maybe you guys can open my eyes on this one. Yes, but this is what I was wondering about yesterday, of all of this. Why did the lawyer make the assumption that the dropped off package was whistleblowing and not a threat? If it was just a package dropped off anonymously, my first thought was, this is a threat. This is, we know who you are. We know where you live. Where is the jump come if you're the lawyer saying, no, this is a whistleblower. We'd like them to come forward. They're indicating to us that evidence has been tampered with if there's no note that goes along with it.
Well, maybe
how can you make that assumption? That's a question
I
have.
Maybe it's not an assumption. I mean, it's possible he knows a little bit more than he said. But I'm with you. I mean, my first, when I wasn't able, I was in a meeting, so I didn't watch it live, the press conference. When I saw the facts coming out, my first thought was, wow, that's a
threat. Yeah.
That's them saying exactly as you're saying, Jeff, that you can't mess with us and we know who you are.
Yeah.
But I mean,
the fact
what a
that,
strange thing.
The fact that he framed it, the fact that he framed it as whistleblowing in his press conference, I thought was an indication of that's kind of what where their heads are at about it. Like someone, some good Samaritan coming forward and saying, this is how jacked the investigation is. And he actually thanked them in the press conference. So I imagine that's kind of...
I just don't know how you can make that assumption, though.
I don't know. How can you make any assumption in this case?
Well, you can't. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so a package has been dropped off with your client's name on it.
Yeah. I don't know.
What does it mean? I don't know.
None of us know.
No. See last week's podcast and see how many Twitter follows I lost to go along with it.
But I'll say this. We'll know after that independent investigation looks into it.
Oh, yes. Right away.
That's right.
Hey,
that's
CJ, right. Big night tonight. Hey, buddy.
It's going to be fun. Puck Talks in Toronto.
And you've been all across. CJ's been doing yeoman's work. I was talking to CJ this morning. He's like, now I think I know what it feels like to be in a rock band. Because you've done.
I said just a little bit. I mean, it's not at that level, but to go across the country, 4 shows in 4 nights in 4 cities. And it was just Kevin Kennedy organizes the talks and myself doing every show. You know, we were carrying the sound system in a hockey bag and we'd have to get in and set everything up and set up the merch table and. It was cool. Hang on.
Are you like selling merch out of a van in the back of a venue?
Yeah, wait a second. The merch table.
$10 t-shirt.
we're selling MVSW shirts. Wish I didn't tell you. The money goes to the Jeff Merrick Benevolent Fund.
That's really awesome. Well, everybody, make sure you pick up your CJ as my homeboy t-shirt. Pick up his new comedy album CJ at the Tilted Kilt. It's gonna be great.
That's awesome. Tonight, by the way, for those interested, doors open at 7, 9:18 Bathurst. CJ will be moderating. I'll be doing a junior panel with Cosentino, then doing a panel with Bob McKenzie and Justin Bourne. Who else? Dave Bedini's there. Selena Martin is there. Stephen Stanley from Lowest of the Low. So we got tunes and everything and some hockey stories. Wow. And yes, Greg, you will be happy to know that those in attendance will get my full review and a screening of the 65 Memorial Cup incident. I am bringing it along by popular demand.
The first time that this video has been seen outside of Merrick Stouffville living room or the back of a pub.
Correct.
So it's pretty.
That's right, in Ottawa. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I'm just hoping that the technology is going to not fail us in this case because you've really been bigging this up. And if we can't somehow show it on the screen.
No, you guys can do it. You and Kevin are going to pull this one together. Don't you worry.
Oh, man. Yeah, we were in Calgary running wires, running out to get stuff. I mean,
Are you like?
I was like rock and roll.
Like, are you like Chipmunk, roadie for the defense, old SCTV style?
Yeah, basically at this point. But honestly, it's a lot of fun. Like we're in the early days with Puck Talks, and I'm sure some of your listeners don't even know what I'm talking about. But it's gotten really, really positively reception. Positive reception everywhere we went, and eventually we want to be like hockey rock and roll. It's meant to be fun. We're going to see some different things. It's not just people on stage talking. We might see some quiz games. Who knows? But it's,
ooh, Greg.
I know.
Game shows,
I
Greg.
And I'm feeling everything else. I saw that there's 10 kegs of beer that have been carried into 918 Bathurst this afternoon. So if nothing else, someone will find something they like.
I, for one, am very excited about Chris Johnston and Jeff Merrick bringing the Hawk and Rock connection together.
That's right. You know it. Me and CJ, baby. By the way, you can follow Puck Talks Live at Puck Talks Live. That's the Twitter feed for information about tonight. Oh, Saskia Stewart's going to be there tonight, too. Check it out, yo.
Oh,
and there's rumors that Mr. at NHL Ties might be there as well. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
I know. It made me debate wearing a tie. I mean, it's not usually a tie kind of event. But
I know. I don't know if I'm going to wear one. I don't think I'm going to.
I'm not going to either.
No.
But the thought was there.
All right, Chris. Have fun tonight, buddy.
Thanks, bud. We'll see you tonight.
Okay. Thanks for having me, guys. We'll talk soon.
CJ, tonight, 9:18 Bathurst in downtown Toronto. That's Bathurst and Bloor a little bit north on Bathurst. Doors open at 7. All the yakking begins at 8.
You're saying that there's a chance that at NHL Ties will be in attendance.
Yeah. You know how I know that?
How's that?
Because he's sitting to my immediate right now.
What?
What? Turn on that microphone, Mr. at NHL Ties.
What?
I know. Check it out. I'm the fan today, by the way, as I'm sure you can tell.
Patrick, why are you Why are you so hard on me with my tie selection on Yahoo videos?
This is not a place to air your grievances.
Is it because I pre-tie them?
It's largely because you pre-tied them, and then you just throw them over your head.
His father tied them in high school, and he's never undone them. He just tightens them up.
I thought I'd get points just for not having a clip-on, but apparently, like, you gotta actually retie the tie occasionally to make it look good.
You're not at a calf roping competition.
Do you think with the size of my head being so rotund that I should go with a bigger knot and not wear skinny ties?
I think you should probably not tie them before you try and pull them over your head. That would be helpful.
It's not bad.
It's also good advice.
Deb Berman, our stylist, always wants me to get into more skinny ties. You think I should go? Because I always have this debate because PJ Stock wears like the big ties, like with authority, and bam!
Oh my God.
It's a great looking knot.
No, it is not a good looking knot. His tie looks like the sail on an America's Cup boat.
It's a belt buckle. It's a belt buckle just underneath his Adam's apple. But whatever. The Count Stockula rocks a tie like no one else, as far as I'm concerned.
That's no moon. That's a knot.
Should I stick with the skinny ties this year? Or should I change up the vibe? I don't know. I'm hot and cold on the haircut this year. Not sure what I'm going to... I would just take it down to the bone if it were out to me.
Which Caucasian hip-hop artist?
I know, eh? Last year, the Macklemore. I don't know what I'm going to do. I was telling everyone, like, I'm just going to take it to the bone. I don't give a shit. I'm just going to go monk style.
Nice.
But what should I do for the tie this year? Match at NHL ties?
You match the width of your lapels. So on your suit jackets, whatever the width of your lapel is, your tie
That's
should
your
be
rule?
Something there. That is not my rule, young man.
Sorry,
that is the rule.
So hang on. So you match the width of the tie with the width of the lapel?
Your tie should be no wider than the width of your lapel.
Oh, no wider. Okay.
Yeah.
So
you can
like
go
a clown
skinnier.
Tie, then.
Yeah. You know.
Clown tie. That was all like radio executives from the late 60s with the short, fat, huge ties like that.
But their lapels, the point of the lapel also went out to their shoulders.
Fair. Okay.
The edge of their shoulders. So.
Anything in tie technology I've missed since we last saw the NHL on the ice?
No.
It's all the same.
Oh, yeah.
Same rules apply.
You're not
changing things up this year. Oh, by the way, actually, we have, like, you know, every year the NHL sort of changes up the rule book a little bit, and there's three on three, and there's coaches challenge.
You guys,
anything
you're
doing?
You guys obviously missed the Reebok Edge tie system. There's now piping. Piping on the ties.
What about the Reebok tie pump? We have that.
We're going straight to the Adidas technology, the Cool Dry, and some Gore-Tex, and everybody is going to have three stripes.
Oh, no, that's going to ruin the tie.
No. Sorry, stripes are in this season. Stripes are in. So having three of them is going to be really in.
Yeah, I understand Adidas is trying to leave room for ads on ties. That's what I heard.
Well, ties are the next area for advertisements, Greg.
That's true. That's very true. Who among the heralded Canadian broadcasters do you consider to have the best tie game?
PJ Stock. I'm kidding.
Oh. I thought PJ's game is pretty tight when it comes to ties.
PJ's game is pretty good. Yeah, PJ's game is pretty good.
But you know what he is? He's quantity over quality.
Yeah, the bigger the
knot.
Because
with a big enough tie, you can fill up that collar pretty fast.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like to notice the genius of my genius is subtle. My genius is so subtle, Patrick. You really need to have a sharp eye.
We need a Hubble.
Pretty much.
We need the Hubble for your subtle. Okay.
Right.
Well, we'll get the one that's corrected for vision, too.
All right, very good. Very good.
Greg, to answer your question, it's always and will be Drew Remenda. The man is tie 99 for a reason.
Yeah, I know.
Great choice. You're absolutely right. I've often seen your little Microsoft Paint expos on circling how good his ties are. So obviously he's doing something right, and you're right. I mean, Drew Remenda, not only a gentleman and a scholar, but obviously his tie game is impeccable.
I'll have you know, young man, that's an Apple iPad that we do all of our scribbling on.
Right. That's true.
How quick can you turn those around? So from screen cap to insult me on Twitter, how fast? What's your turnaround?
We're aiming for less than a minute.
Because there have been sometimes, like, I'll be doing an intermission, and it'll be over, we'll go to break, I'll come back, and all of a sudden I'm getting destroyed, just starched by you on Twitter.
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. We're honest and even in our assessments.
Right.
I guess my last question is, do you prefer the charity point, or do you like ties?
I prefer ties.
Spoiler warning.
Very good.
The account works on multiple ironic levels, and that happens to be one of them.
That happens to be one of them. You've been in Toronto for a couple of days. What have you done?
I did as many tourist things as I humanly could, which means I just wandered around the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Okay, so you went to the Hall. So now, was that your first time at the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Okay, nickel and dime tour. What'd you think?
Nickel and dime tour. It was worth a nickel and dime.
Okay. So, see, I like the Resource Center a lot better, but that's like, that speaks to the geek in me, right? I know, Wish. I know. Well, look, Gretzky's 802 stick. I don't need to
see
that.
Wait, hold on. Are you talking about the one that's at the MasterCard?
No. He went to the one on Front Street.
No. But is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, because when I was there for the player tour, I tried to go into it, and they actually have the damn thing, like, locked to the point where you need someone to buzz you in.
Well, yeah, because you're not Jeff Merrick.
Clearly.
Oh. You need to know the secret handshake. You have to have the special key.
If you wear your International for Society
for International Hockey Research. Yeah. Thank you,
they have the Ark of the Covenant back there somewhere. You know, it's like it's like levels of security to get back into this stupid place where all they have is dusty copies of the hockey news from 1926.
They have both the 1972 and the 2010 puck, both of which we all believe have mysteriously vanished.
I don't know why they would need that puck. It obviously was a silver medal puck. Aggregate points, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I'm talking about Stanley Cup, dude.
Oh, Stanley Cup?
Yeah, the one that vanished. The one that no one saw go in and then...
No one could find. I see. Yeah. Oh, so Steve Miller donated it to the...
Yeah. Same as Pat Stapleton. Oh, sorry, Whitey. Right. Yeah, donated to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, 72.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay,
very good.
Yeah, okay. Play along.
All right, well, NHL Ties, it was great to hear from you.
Puck Talks Live tonight.
Yes, we are.
Which tie will you be wearing tonight?
That... I'm good. Oh, look, cough button.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Man, he gets out of here fast.
There he goes.
And he gets out of here quick. All right.
Let's, Sam, in the remaining moments that we have on this edition of the show, let's do a little going postal.
Ooh, do we have the intro for it? The snappy one?
Segment every week. It is.
It's time to look deep into the souls of Jeff Merrick and Greg Wyshynski. Whoa, not that deep.
We answer your mail.
PuckDaddyBlog@yahoo.com. On Twitter @JeffMerrick and @Wyshynski. We're going postal on Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Anna would like to know, if the World Cup of Hockey was this year, would Patrick Kane be playing? Would USA Hockey dig their head in the sand like the NHL, or would perhaps a mandate come
loaded
from higher
question.
Up?
Thank you for the editorializing.
It's not a loaded question. It's a legitimate question, but the answer is also pretty obvious, which is that it's nice that they allow USA Hockey and Hockey Canada and all these other organizations to be involved. It's the NHL tournament. I mean, no one's going to have anything to say above and beyond what the NHL wills for this tournament.
Hopefully. Unless there's a charge and a conviction, he's fine.
No, I mean, they didn't have him at the tournament presser or at the NHL media tour just because of the heat going on, but yeah, no. He'll be there. And the NHL's going to... That's why he'll be there and Voinov won't. Because the NHL's going to have the final say on all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Brett in Manitoba has a question, and I don't know the answer, and maybe you do.
What's up, Manitoba?
A friend of mine once told me that Winnipeg Jets beat writer turned TSN personality Gary Lawless...
Mm-hmm.
Was a professional wrestler before he got into media.
What?
As wrestling aficionados, can you confirm any truth in this? So you don't know. No. I don't know the only
media member that I know that's involved in pro wrestling is Dave Stubbs, who was a referee in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
I think he worked both for WWF in Montreal. And did he do stuff with the Rougeaus as well?
And their
promotion? I'm not sure. But I know WWF for sure Dave Stubbs did. But he's the only one that has that tight, you know, direct... pro wrestling to pro hockey connection.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know about Gary, but congrats, Gary, by the way. Nice little signing by TSN. That's awesome.
A big deal for him to be also called. He's like the voice of Winnipeg sports, they said. That's a pretty high accolade there.
Dude's plugged in. Honestly. I mean, you've been on the road with Gary before. Like, that guy is correct. I got a lot of time for Gary Lawless.
Gary and I have had our problems in the past, and a lot of them have been caused by other writers on my site. But occasionally I've also taken my runs at him, too, because I thought the Evander Kane stuff, the Evander Kane coverage in that paper across the board was a problem for me, and Gary didn't help with that. But that's really the only beef I've had with the guy. Ty Fisher writes in, I love it and wouldn't change it, but why is hockey the only sport to embrace fawn over team captains the way they do? Well, you know, the NFL has certainly jumped on the captain bandwagon by having their guys wear the little C and they have little stars on them to say how long they've been the captain. So there's that. But I don't think it's necessarily as heralded
as
the
pronounced
position
on the jersey
as
it is
hockey.
In hockey. Like, it's really pronounced.
Oh, no. It definitely is, but it's not as exalted. Like, no one refers to, like, because the quarterback's the quarterback anyway, right? So it's like just because he wears the C doesn't mean he's like super extra wombo more important. But yeah, hockey definitely elevates the captain in ways other sports don't.
I'm very curious as to why that is. Because now more so, like once upon a time, the captain acting as the mediator between the coach and the team. Don't know how tight that is anymore. Like long gone are the days where, you know, Mark Messier would, you know, walk into Neil Smith's office and say, we have to fire Roger Nilsson because we can't win Stanley Cups playing his style of hockey. Those days are kind of gone.
Right.
And Neil Smith saying, okay, Mess. I remember Neil told me that story. I'm like, what was it like when Messier walked into your office and we got to fire Roger Nilsson? He's like, geez, I'm like almost a rookie general manager. Here comes Mark Messier telling me I got to fire Roger Nilsson. I'm like, geez, my head is spinning. He wants to play all these checkers against the first line guys, and Moose wanted to go up against them. But yeah, those days kind of seem to be long gone, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. Devin or Devon. I'm hoping it's Devon so, you know, we
bring
can
the
all, in our mind's sake, forget the tables. do you think a power play in overtime should be 3-on-2 instead of 4-on-3 in the new format?
Guaranteed goal if it's 3-on-2. I don't mind the 4-on-3. I like the 4-on-3.
Is it a guaranteed goal 3-on-2?
Oh God, it's much easier than 4-on-3.
So by going 4-on-3 in overtime, they're kind of given a little bit of a caveat to the team that's shorthanded to say, well,
we're
going to
give you a
just
chance.
Try to survive this.
Yeah, give you a chance here.
early returns on the 3-on-3 so far this preseason have been very strong.
Great.
By the way,
yeah, it's fun, man.
A lot of people digging it.
So much until the coaches figure out a way to screw it up. This is just going to be fun. Enjoy the infancy of 3-on-3. So I warn you, eventually coaches will figure out a way to dull this blade down.
Yeah, they're all going to, you know, play D. And I'm going to quote my good friend JP from Japer's Rink. 3-on-3 overtime is the Ryan Adams 1989 of ways to end games. It resembles something good and isn't the worst option, but ultimately is just a gimmick. You know what that album is, right?
Taylor Swift did a tribute.
I think it was a pretty good take on it. If only because it puts over the original Taylor Swift album as being something good, which I think it really is. But it is a gimmick. But it's less of a gimmick than that other bullshit gimmick.
Still a gimmick.
Has been determining a
still a gimmick.
Playoff season.
Say what you want, though. I love
skills
it.
Competition.
Well, you know I love the shootout, but both are still gimmicks.
Yeah, but all I know is that no one addressed as a minion from Despicable Me can be in the 3-on-3. Yet I saw one take a penalty shot the other day. So, to be honest here.
You want to get kids involved in hockey? There you go.
That's right. Have them all dressed as plushies. Aaron Fisher Cohen writes, and maybe can you guys talk about why the hell Johan Franzen was cleared to play while he's still having headaches, which is true. Cleared to play for the Red Wings.
The Red Wings, yeah.
Still saying he's experiencing headaches.
Just because you have a headache, does that mean you have a concussion still? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. Going back to last February, too, right?
Right, but has it ever been established that you have to be headache free, like that, and that being headache free is being concussion free? I don't know, dude.
I can't tell you. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on TV and radio when it calls for. I don't know.
Yeah, or do you have to? You know, do you just have to have it at a manageable level? I don't know the answer. I mean, I know that we've been conditioned to think headache free equals cleared to play, just because that's the signal we get from teams when guys are coming back from concussion. He's been headache-free for 3 days straight.
So he's fine to go.
You know? He's good to go. Oh, another concussion, and now he's out for 3 years.
It's the whole thing, too, is, and I was talking to a friend of mine who's a doctor, and she was bringing up the point of it. You hockey guys like have it all wrong. You just think concussion when you see someone get hit in the head. She's like, I deal with concussions when people get hit in the stomach all the time.
Right.
Like get hit in all kinds of body parts and it knocks their head around. You guys just focus on, shoulder to head, elbow to head. It's all body parts.
That's why I keep
coming back to it. Fighting is one thing and that's cool. We can have the debate now. Todd Ewan passes away. We can have the debate about fighting again. But if you want to talk about brain trauma, in a lot of ways, the bigger issue is body checking than fighting.
Right. And that's why when you...
But nobody wants to have that conversation, though. No one wants to have the conversation about body checking because... You know, even the Clutch to Pearls people still like body checking. But if you want to have the conversation about concussions, we'll talk about body checking.
Well, the bigger conversation you have to have is whether this is just an inherently violent sport and you're going to be concussed if you play it.
Yes, it is a concussion sport. Yes.
Well, I've right. said this, so,
just like football, it is a concussion sport. Like, so we can make it as safe as, make right. it as safe as you can.
And I know there are people in the audience like rolling their eyes and saying it's broken record time with these two, but that's the discussion eventually, is should these sports exist?
Let me ask, I always ask the same question of all of the people that, you know, think you can have a concussion-free sport. You can if you let a doctor write the rule book. And the reason we don't let doctors write rule books in sports is because in a lot of ways they are no longer entertaining. And part of the inherent enjoyment of hockey is the danger. It's a dangerous sport. And that is part of the excitement. You can't deny it. And that's why these players are well compensated. And I don't begrudge a single one of them a single dime, because they're one shift away from not being able to tie their shoes or ever play with their kids properly again. But ask yourself this question. Like, if you have one takeaway from today's podcast, ask yourself this. How would hockey look if we let a doctor write the rule book?
It would probably be illegible because their handwriting is so bad.
Can you imagine the game finally, sheets? Who's number six?
Phil writes in, hey guys, long time, first time, love the show. Well, welcome aboard, Phil. Curious, what do you think of teams having a separate jersey that they only wear during the playoffs? It might upset some purists, but I think it could be a cool idea. As it is now, they just throw a little patch on to make the jersey special for the playoffs. Why not a whole different sweater? It could be a throwback or an older one-off or a third jersey or a new design entirely. And what are your thoughts?
There's hockey is so superstitious. Let's say, I don't know, pick a team, the Islanders, go to yet another jersey for the playoffs. Opening round, they get swept by the Penguins 4-0. Barely score 4 goals. They're going to want to put those jerseys on again the next year? Because it's their playoff jersey?
Right, like, and that's why, dude,
when Ray Shero was with Pittsburgh, he hated those powder blue jerseys with a passion. Right. They always lost when they wore them. Shero hated them. Couldn't stand them.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. And that was been an issue for a lot of teams that all of a sudden have bad, quote unquote, bad luck in their third jerseys and don't want to wear them. Or in some cases, they have really good luck and want to keep wearing them. Do I like the idea of having a separate jersey for the playoffs? It would be kind of interesting to see teams roll with their third jerseys as the playoff jersey. I mean, it's almost like when you're watching like a superhero movie, like Iron Man movie or something, and for the big fight at the end, he's always got some new gimmick on the suit, or he has a new suit. Or like in the shitty not Nolan Batman movies, like Batman would all of a sudden show up in a new suit for the big fight at the end.
Wish.
Kind of how it is in hockey.
Wish. Yeah. Dance with who brought you. Dance with who brought you, buddy. Same jersey.
I don't know. I kind of like imagine teams skating out for the first game of the playoffs, and all of their jerseys have metal bat wings on them. Wouldn't that be amazing?
They all have yellow tinted visors.
That's right.
Wow! Now we know they mean business.
Now, this is go time. Now,
hold on a second here. We weren't expecting that.
They're all dressed as minions.
What's with you and minions today?
That's you have to go watch it, man.
I watched the Minions movie. I watched it in the summer.
Australian.
Oh
hockey
yeah.
Game.
I saw that. Yeah,
Minion took a PS. What's the PK? Anyways, all right, everybody, that's show. We're gonna go daily when the season starts, probably in some semblance, some way, shape, or form. You gotta figure out stuff. I gotta figure out stuff. But as it stands, as we inch closer to the regular season. One or two times a week. And as we get even closer to the regular season, then we'll get into our hardcore breaking down the division stuff.
And predictions.
Yeah.
Everyone loves predictions, because then you can look back and say, you don't know your ass from page six. You don't know a wrist shot from a wrist coaches, watch.
Which coaches are on the hot seat? Cough, Todd Richards.
You think so?
Dude, they're going to get off to another terrible start.
Not if the goalie's healthy.
At some point, you got to say to yourself, well, that's just what they do. And at some point, you got to say to yourself, well, maybe we need to stop digging ourselves out into this hole every season.
Well, I'm sure they don't plan to do that. And then John Tortorella takes over in Columbus. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, God, who would take over in Columbus? I know.
Alpo Suminen?
Oh, Timo Solani, I was going to say. Yeah, why would he just, you know, it's going to be some... Paging Ivan Helenka. Ivan Helenka to the white courtesy phone, please.
He's passed away, sir.
Oh, what?
Very well. We'll move along then.
I'm kidding. Of course.
Play with the under 18 tournament in the fall, sir. Or late summer.
Are you saying seances are out of the question?
Maybe a novel approach. We're really thinking outside of the box today. Yeah, we're going. Who's our coach? Ouija board. Today, Harry Houdini will be coaching the team. Harry instructs us to play the Peterborough Freeze. Was a big fan of Roger Nilsson back in the day.
Jay Baruchel is ghost coach.
That's the next great initiative from the NHL. You be the coach. No, really, you be the coach. You make the line changes from your couch. Do that with teams that are just out of the playoffs. Like, if you're out of the playoffs by February, there should be contests to let fans actually run the team. Like, if you're that
yeah, you know, coach.
Instead of having the interim, which everyone knows is going to be fired at the end of the year, have a fan coach a team.
Yeah, coach, it's really easy for you to tell me to skate through a wall when you could float through them. Ghost coach.
I don't want to see any floating out there. Coach, it's all you do. Physician, heal thyself. Come on, coach.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem with our coach. He just disappears in the playoffs. Ghost
so you
coach.
Know, yeah, you know. No. We want Steve Casper, not Casper the Ghost. Damn it. This thing work?
Ghost coach tagline. He's got team spirit coming this fall.
Okay, that's it.
Ghost coach.
That's it. That's it. Tap out.
All right, everybody. Ghost coach. We will see you next week. Everybody, puck talks tonight.
Tonight, 9:18 Bathurst. Woo! Bea McKenzie.
I know for a fact
Jason
that Karen
Sasky.
Karen Douglas is going to be there.
Joe Pack
and NHL Ties. And many other MBSW listeners.
I think some people from the Society for International Hockey Research, including one of the guys... For my money, the best hockey researcher in the game, Paul Patsky, is going to be there tonight in the audience. I know. Don't ask difficult questions of me, Paul.
All right. It'll be fun. All right, everybody. We're going to see you next week. Bye. Thanks to Sam for producing. Thanks to CJ for coming on. Bye, everybody. Bye.